United States Steel, USS, the industrial family that serves the nation, presents the Theater Guild on the air. Our stars, Ronald Coleman, Anita Louise, and Walter Abel. The play, The Green Goddess, produced on the air tonight by the Theater Guild, one of America's foremost theatrical producers. Every day, everywhere, you are served by products of steel. In your home, in your business, in your travel. And when you see on any product the trademark of United States Steel, USS, you'll know the steel is good. And now, direct from the Vanderbilt Theater in New York, the United States Steel Corporation invites you to listen to The Green Goddess. And here is Roger Pryor for the Theater Guild to say a word about our play and our players.
Good evening, everyone. William Archer, a prominent British critic, accepted as a challenge the comment of a disgruntled playwright who said, "You have a great deal to say about other people's plays, yet I notice you've never written one yourself." So in order to prove he could write a play, William Archer sat down and wrote The Green Goddess, which has been described as a perfectly constructed melodrama. When it was first produced, its star was George Arliss as the suave, sinister Rajah of Ruth. Way down on the program was the temple priest, Ronald Coleman. This character had no lines beyond the customary strange noises signifying foreign and exotic dialect. Ronald Coleman tells us that his services were dispensed with after a relatively short period of time, but the young actor, as we all know, was to go far. Taking Horace Greeley's advice, he went west to motion picture headquarters, and the rest is history. We're very pleased and proud to present tonight, in a starring role of the Green Goddess, the erstwhile temple priest, Ronald Coleman himself. We hope you'll enjoy the Theater Guild's radio production of The Green Goddess by William Archer, presented by United States Steel, starring Ronald Coleman as the Rajah, with Anita Louise as Mrs. Creston and Walter Abel as Dr. Treherne. Man's newfound wings. Fog that blinds a man at the helm of his ship, blinds a man at the controls of his plane. Boring steadily forward, blindly forward, Michael Treherne found himself lost in the gray billows that obscured the wingtips of his plane, even obscured the faces of his two passengers. This flight through the high Himalayas, the mysterious mountains between India and China, was dangerous in the best of weather. But with a fog to contend with, death was dogging the plane every foot of the way. With one eye on the gasoline gauge, which slid toward the empty mark, Treherne found himself with a decision to make. As he was about to speak, he heard a sound behind him in the plane, a familiar sound. He'd heard it many times before.
Yeah, one of the passengers, Major Crespin, was drinking again. Before Treherne could speak, he heard the low murmur of Lucilla.
Tony, must you?
Must I what?
Must you drink now?
Of course I must. Cursed fog. I'm cold, Lucilla. This endless blind flying about and that fool at the controls.
Tony, Dr. Hearn will hear you.
What if he does? He's lost. We're all lost. We've been lost for hours.
You're right, Major. I've wondered what kept this plane in the air for the last 10 minutes.
And you really don't know where we are?
I haven't known a thing since this fog set in. Wouldn't it be better, old man, if you waited until we saw this through before you finished the brandy?
Go ahead!
This is it! Better tighten up your safety belt!
Go ahead, do something, Tony! Sit there!
Get a grip on yourself, Gretchen!
Tony, quiet and let Michael alone!
It's the only spot left. It's going to be be bad. I'll have to land with the wheels up. It'll be rough.
Lucilla, are you hurt?
Michael, I don't know. I'm dazed. My leg.
Here. Let me put my arm around you. There.
Thank you. Michael, is Tony all right?
Crespin, I'm all right. Hurt my leg, but not badly, I guess. Well, you miracle man of science, suppose you tell us where we are.
I wish I could.
Look, Michael. That fantastic castle I saw from the air. And those buildings all bunched around it. Nothing but hovels.
Who could be living in such a godforsaken place? Nothing but mountains and fog.
This wind is going right through.
I don't care who they are, Crespin. It means we'll get help.
Oh, these mountains, Michael. I feel as if they were closing in on us. Please, please see if there isn't a way out.
Salamanda!
Michael, listen.
I see him.
The native. He's running toward the plane.
If there's anything of value left in that plane, you better get it before he steals it. Get away from there!
And there's another one. See him looking at us from behind those rocks?
It's all right, Lucilla.
Look, one of them's running away. Hey, you! Come back here!
Oh, it's no use, Tony. He's only running faster. Michael, haven't you any idea where we might be?
None, Lucilla.
Would the compass tell you anything?
If it's still working. Now, you're sure you're all right?
Yes, Michael.
I'll be right back. Well, that was a close shave.
You can thank Michael. If he hadn't kept his head, we would have crashed into those mountain peaks.
Yes, and one of us might have had his neck broken. And it might have been the right one, Lucilla. It might have been me.
Why will you say such things, Tony?
Because they're true. Treherne didn't care whether I was hurt or not. He probably hoped I'd be killed.
Oh, Tony, you've had too much to drink.
That's what you think. And if I have, it's your fault.
Tony, why go over all of this again?
3 years of being married to you would drive any man to drink.
You know very well it was drink and many other things that have brought us to this point.
Oh, so that's it. I've not only offended your sensibilities, now I'm in your way. You're in love with Treherne.
Tony.
Every day for 3 years, you've been thinking of the mistake you made marrying me.
Tony, if you have any decency left, watch what you say.
Ah, the paragon of virtue returns. Quite a hero, even if I say so.
Please, Tony.
I couldn't figure out a thing. The compass is nothing but smash glass.
Oh, Michael, I'd hoped you'd find out where we are.
One of those natives we saw was looking at the plane. Strange fellow. Looked like a priest or something. I tried what little Hindustani I know, but all he kept answering was, Rook, Rook,
Rook.
Have you ever heard of such a place?
Never heard of it.
Wait a minute, Michael. Tony, wasn't there something about Rook in that newspaper I brought along?
Well, maybe there was. I'll go and get it.
You made a wonderful landing, Michael.
Yes, but if I'd had another pint of gas, I would have headed for that open field.
Here's that newspaper, Lucilla. You were right. Listen to this. Abdullabad, Tuesday. Sentence of death has been passed on 3 men found guilty of murdering Frank Hinsdale. It appears that these murderers are natives of Rook, a small and little-known independent state among the northern spurs of the Himalayas. The men are political fanatics.
So that's where we are.
Let me have that paper. It might be safer to burn this paragraph in case there's anybody around here who can read English. Lend me your lighter, Crespin.
Here you are.
There, that does it.
Michael, that native priest has disappeared.
Well, he's probably gone to call out the rest of his congregation. He didn't seem to be too friendly. He kept pointing toward that cliff over there and mumbling something I couldn't understand.
Probably didn't know what he was saying himself.
Now look, Major. This place may be some sort of a sacred enclosure. It may be a sacrilege, our being here.
Michael, listen.
We'd better move until we're sure how these people are going to act. Let me give you a hand, Mrs. Preston.
Those rocks are where we ought to be. We could stand off an army from there. Hurry up.
Oh, look at them, Treherne. There's hundreds of them.
They've got knives and spears.
Don't shoot, Preston. Wait. Look out, Preston. Down, Lucilla.
Michael, here comes some more. They're mounted.
Treherne, I'll kill a few. That'll hold the rest off. And
hold it, Preston.
That man on horseback is waving them off. He's holding them back. Michael, look. They're obeying him.
Anya! Come on, Zingali! Anya!
What's happened? Why are they suddenly quiet?
That man dismounted. He's coming this way on foot.
I'll go out and meet him.
Careful, Michael. He's coming straight toward us.
You may come out from behind those rocks.
You speak English?
I have always thought so. Some of my friends at Oxford disagree. Please come out from those rocks. You are safe.
I have to apologize for landing uninvited in your territory.
Uninvited, I assure you, not unwelcome.
We were given to understand that this is the state of Rook.
The kingdom of Rook, sir. And I am its Raja.
I am Major Crespin. Permit me to introduce my wife.
I am delighted to welcome you to my dominions, Mrs. Crespin.
Your Highness is very kind.
And this is Dr. Michael Treherne.
John. Treherne. Treherne? Not the Dr. Treherne they call the pastor of malaria?
I'm afraid the newspapers have gone a little overboard about my work, Roger. It's pretty incomplete as yet.
A scientist and a pilot as well. Remarkable. I presume our mountain fog was responsible for carrying you so far off your course.
Well, partly the fog and partly faulty instruments.
I see. How unfortunate. I can see that your plane is not a military one, Doctor.
That's true, sir. I had just received word of an epidemic of black fever in Bajalong. I was going up there to investigate.
And when Dr. Treherne heard we were traveling in the same direction, he offered to fly us. I was just starting on a mission for my government.
An unfortunate ending. You have created quite a sensation here. My people are not sure, simple souls, whether you are gods or demons. But the fact of your having descended in the garden of the temple of our local goddess is considered highly significant.
I don't see any goddess.
Allow me to introduce you to her. Come this way. It's just a step. Stand right here, please. Amabel, Maki, Vandali.
Parola mande, ante!
Good heavens, where?
Oh.
Does the color of our goddess startle you? Are you allergic to her peculiar shade of green? Or perhaps the fact that she has not two arms, but six.
Disgusting. But just what I'd expect in a place like this.
That altar, those dead animals and flowers, are those the sacrifices?
Yes, our religion may seem to you to be rather primitive. Cruel, in fact, when the green goddess claims her victim.
Well, I hope, Roger, there won't be any trouble about our getting back to Bajmali.
To civilization, you were about to say, weren't you, Major?
Not exactly, Roger. What I intended to say was...
No apologies are necessary, Major. We realize we are barbarians. We've had some 5,000 years to reconcile ourselves to the fact. This rather elaborate sword, the symbol of my office, was being worn by my ancestors when yours was still painting themselves blue. But what can I be thinking of? You are still standing, Mrs. Crespin. I hope you will accept the hospitality of my poor house. Watkins, come here.
Did your Highness call for me?
I did. My litter for Mrs. Crespin, quickly.
Yes, your Highness. Fly, Massey, Vimpai.
You will do me the honor of dining with me this evening? I trust you will not find us altogether uncivilized.
Your Highness will have to excuse the barbarism of our attire. We have nothing to bear but what we stand in.
Oh, I think we can put that to rights. You see, Mrs. Crespin, I sometimes have the pleasure of entertaining European ladies here. And I find that Parisian gowns help to mitigate the terrors of exile for them. Then, as for civilization, you know, I have always at my elbow one of its most finished products, Watkins. You will recognize in Watkins, gentlemen, another representative of the ruling race.
Your Highness will have your joke.
He is my Prime Minister and all my cabinet, but in particular, my Lord Chamberlain. No one can touch him when it comes to making a cocktail or a salad. You may be surprised at my praising him to his face in this fashion, but there is not the slightest risk of his head outgrowing that modest bowler. I have guarantees for his fidelity. Eh, Watkins?
I know it's when I'm well off. That's what your Highness means.
Yes, I mean a little more than that. Those scoundrels, the bearers, are taking a long time, Watkins.
The ladies are out to our fresh curtains, your Highness. There won't be but a minute now.
You were speaking of transport, Major. Is your plane past repair?
Completely wrecked, I'm afraid.
I see. I suppose you had no more gasoline left.
Not a drop. Both motors had quit cold.
The missus is ready, Your Highness.
Thank you, Watkins. May I escort you, Mrs. Crespin?
If you please. I find that my knees are inclined to shake.
Oh, my arm.
Thank you.
Please follow us, gentlemen. Hello, what's this? A newspaper?
Yes, sir. Must have been thrown out of the plane when it landed. Here you are, sir.
Newspaper only 2 days old. This is such a rarity, you must allow me to glance at it. You destroyed this column, Doctor?
Unfortunately, I did.
I know your motive, Dr. Trehearne, and I appreciate it. It was done out of consideration for my feelings, wishing to spare me the painful piece of intelligence about my countrymen. That was very thoughtful of you, but quite unnecessary. I already know what you tried to conceal.
You know? Your Highness knows about...
I know that three of my subjects, accused of political murder, are being held by the authorities outside my kingdom and have been sentenced to death.
But how is it possible for you to know this so soon, Roger?
Bad news travels fast, Mrs. Crispin. Tell me, a chance of their sentences being commuted?
I'm afraid not.
Of course, their sentences won't be commuted. It was cold-blooded murder. Members of some fanatical cult, aren't they?
When is the execution to be?
I think tomorrow or the day after.
Tomorrow or the day after. I see.
Does Your Highness know these men personally?
Know them? Oh, yes. They are my brothers.
So, this is his hospitality, Trehearne. A palace like a stone prison. As cold and drafty as a tomb. And that confounded flute driving me crazy. It only played a melody. It just goes over and over the same notes until... Oh, what I need is a drink. I've looked all over for it.
On the sideboard.
Oh, yes, I see. That's better. Join me, Trehearne?
No, thanks. By the way, where is Mrs. Crispin?
She was taken off to the women's quarters.
And you let her go off alone?
What the devil could I do? I couldn't go with her into the women's quarters, could I? Just what business is it of yours?
All right, Crispin. Let's not start an argument. Let's hope that she's all right.
Trehearne, remember what the Rajah said about those fanatics? Do you think he was serious when he said they were his brothers?
He probably meant they were caste brothers or simply men of his race. But even so, it's bad for us. Careful, Crispin. Here comes Watkins.
Yes, sir? Oh, it's you, Watkins.
Yes, it's me, sir.
Watkins, I want to thank you for all you've done for us. It was rather a relief to find one of ourselves in a place like this.
Thank you, sir.
I suppose you find it rather lonely here, don't you? Nobody much to talk to, nobody much to see.
Oh, I don't mind it a bit, sir. Not since I mastered the native lingo. Of course, at times I do get a bit sick for the sight of the outside.
How far are we away from Bajmali, Watkins?
I really couldn't say, sir. I've never been there myself, but they tell me it takes about 3 weeks. After that...
You've never been to Bajmali, eh? And I was just thinking your face was familiar. That I'd seen you somewhere before. I was sure it was in Bajmali.
Oh, no, sir. You might have seen me in England, sir, or America, but never there. Does the flute bother you, sir? I'll have it stopped. Come here, brother! Now, if you'll excuse me, gentlemen, I must go and see about the rest of the dinner.
Just a moment, Watkins. If you've never been to Bajmali, how in the devil did you get here?
I came with His Highness by way of Tashkent.
Tashkent?
Isn't it possible to get to Bajmali direct without going through Central Asia?
Oh, yes, sir. It's been done. But I'm told there's some mighty tight places along the way.
Difficult traveling for a lady?
Oh, next door to impossible, sir.
Fine. How do you do? Tell me, Watkins, is His Highness the Rajah married?
Oh, yes, sir. Very much so.
Children?
15 sons, sir.
15 sons? I suppose the daughters don't count.
Oh, never had the opportunity of counting them, sir. And now, if you'll pardon me, I have my duties.
Your master spoke of entertaining European ladies.
Just where were they from?
From Paris and such places, sir. His Highness has a weakness for the ladies.
Well, what about my wife? Where is she?
Oh, make your mind easy, sir. The lady won't meet no undesirable characters. I turn her over to the female in charge of the wardrobe. She's in safe hands.
Well, this female, is she trustworthy?
Oh, yes, sir. She is. You see, she happens to be my wife, in a manner of speaking. And now, if you'll excuse me, I must run my eye over the dinner table, gentlemen. I'd hate to incur the larger displeasure. You see, gentlemen, if I did, he might slit my throat. Just like that.
Lucilla, are you all right?
Yes, Tony, yes.
Where did you get that dress? It's positively indecent.
Tony, Michael, it's been a nightmare out of the Arabian Nights. I've been scared to death. A hideous old woman. Rose petals in my bathwater. Incense burning in perfect clouds.
Why didn't you refuse?
Refuse? Tony, use your head. I couldn't. I was surrounded by attendants. Each one of them intent upon helping me. But in such a way, I couldn't refuse. Although they tried not to show it, they were acting under orders.
Under orders?
It's true, Michael. I felt as if I were being prepared for a sacrifice.
Nonsense.
It wasn't nonsense, Tony. No matter what I wanted to do, they wouldn't let me. They just gently and firmly made me do exactly what they wanted. Take this dress, for instance. There were dozens to choose from. But no, I finally had to wear it. Oh, I was afraid, Michael.
Poor Lucille.
But I'm all right now. Tell me, has the Rajah been here?
No, but Watkins has. Major Crespin has been trying to pry some information out of him.
You know, Michael, when I first saw Watkins, his face looked familiar. I thought I'd seen him somewhere before.
You did?
Yes. Oh, I wish I could get a good look at him now that I'm not scared out of my wits.
Here he comes again. I'll call him over. Oh, Watkins.
Yes, sir?
Mrs. Preston would like to speak to you.
Madam?
Thank you for all you've done for me, Watkins.
Only too pleased to obey the Rajah's orders, madam. Is there anything else you wish?
No, Watkins.
Thank you kindly, madam. Excuse me, then.
I was right. Tony, do you remember the first year of the war? When we first went to Bajmali, there was a man who used to be assigned as guard outside the colonel's office.
Good Lord, you mean she's right?
Of course I'm right. He was supposed to have murdered some woman, and then he disappeared.
Lucilla, you're right.
I'm sure of it.
Don't ever mention it.
Why not?
We may be able to make use of it later. We're in a tough spot here, Crispin. And that information may come in handy.
What was that?
Apparently, the Rajah's coming.
Forgive me for being the last to appear. Even though a barbarian, I know my duties as a host. But I had to hold a sort of cabinet meeting with regard to questions which arose from your most welcome arrival.
We're only interested in getting out of here.
Shall we postpone that until after dinner, when we can talk seriously? And besides, if you're in too great a hurry to desert me, I'll be forced to conclude that you, Major, and even you, Madam, are dissatisfied with your welcome.
How could we be so ungrateful, and especially me?
Ah, you chose well, Madam. That dress displays your charms to perfection. Yes, a perfection that, I see Watkins is giving me the signal that dinner is ready. Will you take my arm, Mrs. Crespin?
Thank you.
By the way, Mrs. Crespin and gentlemen, do you mind if I indulge in a slight whim of mine during dinner?
No, go right ahead.
I love music while I have dinner. And you, Mrs. Crespin, shall tell me what you think of my taste.
If it's anything like your taste in women's clothes, I'll agree with you.
Excuse me. Watkins.
Your Highness.
Start the phonograph.
Yes, sir.
If you'll sit at my right, Mrs. Crespin, and you there, Dr. Traherne.
And I suppose this is my spot.
Exactly, Major Crespin. May I propose a toast? To ourselves, who meet on the bridge of time and exchange one greeting and part.
What the devil was that gruesome thing called?
It's by Gounod. It's called The Funeral March of a Marionette.
Funeral March? Gives me the creeps.
Yes. It's quite amusing, don't you think?
listening to The Green Goddess, produced by the Theater Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here speaking for United States Steel is George Hicks.
Good evening. While you listen to tonight's performance of the Theater Guild on the Air, you're just sitting quietly and I hope enjoying yourself. But even though your body is quiet, your bloodstream moves steadily along doing the vital work that must be done to keep you alive and strong. That's the way it is with the railroads in our country. On this quiet Sunday evening, when millions of us are enjoying a pleasant rest, the railroads are mighty busy moving freight at the rate of 4,335,000 tons per hour and 2,320,000 passengers per day. Railroad traffic might be called the bloodstream of America. It cannot stop if our nation is to be strong and healthy. No wonder the United States Steel Corporation is so proud of the part it's been able to play in the constant improvement of the service and efficiency of America's railroads through better steel and better products of steel. For serving America's indispensable railroads is one of the most important ways in which U.S. Steel can serve you, the public. Let me give you these brief examples of how U.S. Steel serves the railroads. Back in the early 1930s, U.S. Steel participated in the development of the remarkable high-tensile stainless steel, which is so familiar to all of us in the sleek and shiny streamliners that carry railroad passengers so comfortably and speedily. About the same time, U.S. Steel was also working on a new kind of high-strength steel for other railroad equipment called Corten. This amazing steel gets its name from its corrosion resistance coupled with its high tensile strength. This combination of properties makes possible significant reduction in the dead weight of mobile equipment. Since 1934, when Corten steel was first introduced, car builders and railroads have used this versatile steel in more than 65,000 freight cars, with a saving in dead weight of 2 to 5 tons per car. Now, you may not have noticed any of the new freight cars built with USS Corten, but you've probably seen some of the streamlined trains, trolley cars, buses, and tank trucks built with this amazing material. It's one of the steels that you're sure to see more and more of. One of the outstanding steels developed by United States Steel's research program to provide better transportation and better living for you, the consumer.
We pause now for station identification. You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
And now the curtain rises on the second act of The Green Goddess by William Archer, starring Ronald Colman as the Rajah of Rook, Anita Louise as Mrs. Crespin, and Walter Abel as Dr. Treherne. As dinner ended, it was at the Rajah's suggestion that his guests joined him in coffee on the balcony, overlooking the towering, snow-capped peaks of the Himalayas. A tenseness has seemed to grip the Rajah's guests, but the Rajah himself seems to be composed.
More coffee, Dr. Treherne?
No, thank you.
Not a bad dinner, considering the fact that we're barbarians.
That's unkind, Rajah. It was a magnificent feast.
My compliments on the service, Rajah.
Yes, I'll have to admit it was well done. Couldn't have been done better back home.
And coming from you, Major Crespin, that is the highest of compliments. I see that you are admiring the heavens, Doctor.
And so was I, Your Highness. I've never seen so many stars. They're so bright, they seem almost within reach.
For my part, I look at the stars as little as possible. As a spectacle, they are monotonous and, I think, rather ostentatious. I was guilty of a little showing off today when I rode up with my household guard in time to save your neck. But think of the Maharaja up yonder, who night after night whistles up his glittering legions and puts them through their deadly punctual drill, as much as to say, see, what a devil of a fellow am I.
Do you suppose they're inhabited?
Dear lady, I'd rather not suppose it.
Isn't one world bad enough? Do we want it multiplied by millions? You see, Mrs. Crespin, I belong to a race that first found out life was a colossal blunder. I'm rather proud of that.
Oh, there's a moon rising over the snowfield. I hope you wouldn't brush her from the heavens.
Oh, no. No, I like her silly, good-natured face. And she's useful to lovers and brigands and other lawless folk with whom I have great sympathy. Besides, I don't know that she's so silly either. She always seems to raise her eyebrows in mild astonishment at human folly.
All this is rather out of my depth, Your Highness. You said after dinner we'd discuss our problem.
Ah, yes, Major. I'm glad you spared me the embarrassment of reopening that subject. Although I suppose we should have to come to it sooner or later.
Raja, when you said these men were your brothers, did you mean exactly that? Or did you mean your tribesmen?
Oh, not at all. They are my blood brothers.
Are you trying to defend them? Because if that's the way you feel, the sooner we get out of here, the better.
Get out of here? Ah, that is just where the difficulty arises.
What do you mean? Just what are you leading up to?
This, Major. It seems that my subjects have interested themselves in our little problem. They are a simple people, of course, and turn to their goddess whenever they're perplexed. They see the finger of fate in your landing practically in the lap of their goddess.
What do you mean, Roger? The finger of fate?
Doctor, you are familiar with the quotation, uneasy lies the head that wears a crown.
What you're really trying to say is that you're going to prevent us from leaving.
Oh, Dr. Traherne.
You're going to hold us as hostages. Hostages in exchange for your brother.
Not I, Doctor. This is no idea of mine. You may have noticed in history that family affection among rulers doesn't exist. No, my good doctor. No, if the decision were mine, I'd leave my brothers to their fate.
You can't mean that, Roger.
But I do. I like being a king. I like to rule. And with these brothers of mine alive, who knows what might happen? Suppose they should come back to Rook with certain ideas. Ideas that would foment just the sort of frenzy that caused them to kill. No, my brothers are a menace to my peace and security.
But haven't you any control over your subjects?
Yes, but it is only by their consent that I retain that power. If I defied them, they'd upset my throne immediately.
Come to the point, Roger. You've been beating about the bush.
Only to spare you the obvious, Major.
Please come to the point.
Madam, at your request I shall. My people, as I have said, are a simple, straight-thinking people. We demand an eye for an eye. A tooth for a tooth. A life for a life.
Good Lord. Are you serious?
Unfortunately, I am.
You'd kill us.
Not I, madam. Oh, not I.
If your brothers are hanged, and they will be, you'll murder us in cold blood?
Not in cold blood, Major. There is nothing cold-blooded about my people. And believe me, there is nothing cold-blooded about their green goddess. It seems to me I did hear a murmur about white goat sacrifices.
You can't be serious.
I'm always serious about serious things.
How about Mrs. Crespin?
Well, as to Mrs. Crespin, the goddess might not be too exacting. Of course, I would have to make a personal appeal. Let's say it would depend on what personal arrangements I might make with Mrs. Crespin. And don't bother to draw your gun, Doctor. That wouldn't help you a bit. You'd only be torn to pieces that much sooner. You might look at that gun of yours, Doctor.
Empty.
Of course. While you were bathing, my friend Watkins suggested that... it was a good suggestion. No, my friends, we have reached an impasse. If my brothers die, you die. If they go free, you go free. Mrs. Crespin, I hinted that perhaps the goddess might relent slightly if you agreed to...
Enough of that.
As you wish. The admirable Watkins. You may come in.
On foraging, so Debadash next to ask you to leave your guest for a moment and a pair of stakes.
Oh, yes, I see. I have an idea what this may be about. Mrs. Crispin, if you'll wait a few minutes, I may have some news for you. excuse me, please. Come, Watkins.
He's bluffing. He doesn't mean a word of it.
He does mean it, Tony. He means every word of it. Oh, Michael, I'm frightened.
There's that fellow Watkins. We might be able to do business with him.
I doubt it, Kristen.
Perhaps Tony's right.
But even if we would, Watkins couldn't guide us through the mountains. He's told us he doesn't know the way.
Well, maybe he could hire someone to guide us.
I don't believe we can be so far from the frontier.
Didn't Watkins say 3 weeks to Dalsmalley?
3 weeks, eh? Yet somehow they know all about what happened less than a week ago.
It's our only chance. I'll get to Watkins.
Shh. What is it?
Major, do you hear that?
A radio transmitter.
They're in radio contact with Dalsmalley.
So that's how the Rajah knew about the execution of his brothers. Tony, you're an expert on radio.
I'd like to get my hands on that set for a few minutes.
What do you think it is?
Judging by the sound, it's somewhere close by. I'll try to find out for sure.
If the Rajah ever finds out that either one of us knows anything about radio, we'll never get anywhere near that set.
You're right, Sir Hearn. You heard that, Lucilla.
Watch yourself. No matter what happens, don't let on we know they even have a radio. The Rajah may come back at any moment. They've stopped sending.
Stand near me, Tony. Michael, you stand there. I hear him coming. Oh, yes, it seems such a pity that his scenery has never been photographed. Those mountains.
Yes, Mrs. Preston. They seem to close right in on us. Must be the clearness of the air. Oh, you weren't gone long, Your Highness.
I said I might have some news for you. Well, it's come through.
Come through?
By wireless, my good doctor. My brother's execution, they have been set for the day after tomorrow. Yes, the day after tomorrow. At sunset. By the way, were you surprised at our having a radio transmitter here?
Me? Surprised? I wouldn't be surprised at anything.
The transmitter's signal seems to be getting rather weak. Would either of you two gentlemen know anything about it?
Not I.
And you, Major Crespin?
No experience at all with radio.
How unfortunate. I had hoped either one of you might have a look at it. But, Mrs. Crespin, I see that you are tired.
I'm afraid so, Roger.
Too much excitement. And too much of our bracing mountain air. May I suggest that you retire?
That would be wonderful. Unless you think I'm ungracious.
Well, not in the least, my dear Mrs. Crespin. I shall call Watkins. I'm quite sure that Watkins is safe enough to see you to your quarters. Watkins, come here, please.
Your Highness.
Will you please see that Mrs. Crespin reaches her bedroom safely?
Yes, sir. This way, madam.
Good night, Mrs. Crespin. And may you sleep well.
Good night, Roger. Good night, Tony. Good night, Dr. Treherne.
Good night.
Good night.
Off to you, madam.
Major Crespin, you are to be complimented. You are a lucky man.
How so?
Why, on having such a charmingly beautiful wife. Ah, but here I am delaying my duties as a host. A final whiskey and soda, perhaps, gentlemen?
No, thank you.
I don't mind. No, thank you.
Then it's good night, gentlemen. I'll see you in the morning. Ah, look, gentlemen. There is the Green Goddess, aglow in the splendor of the moonlight. Odd. From this window, she's a hideous-looking thing. She seems to have an expression on her face that, well, it makes her look as if she were waiting for something. Perhaps the day after tomorrow. Good night, gentlemen.
Treherne. Wake up.
Treherne. What's that? Oh, it's you, Crespin.
Get up. I want to talk to you.
Did you sleep?
Certainly not. I start to doze off, and every time I do, I see that expression on the Rajah's face. As he said, the Green Goddess is waiting for the day after tomorrow. Treherne, that Rajah is as crazy as a loon. As crazy as those brothers of his. All this show of politeness. It's too bad he doesn't die with them.
Preston, I've been thinking. Just before I went to bed, I went out on the balcony. Come here. I want to show you something.
We'll never get out this way. It's a sheer drop of 100 feet to those rocks. Turn. If we could get that Rajah in here, grab him from the back and drop him over...
That was my idea. And then I remembered that he said the natives would only tear us to pieces that much quicker. And Mrs. Crespin would be left alone. There's someone knocking. Let's get back inside. Come in.
Good morning, Major. Good morning, Dr. Treherne.
sleep well?
Look, Roger, a joke's a joke, but you're going too far.
I have had an amusing time trying to convince some of my subjects that your death would not avenge my brother's. Most amusing.
How did you make out?
Well, I tried to cancel the ceremony that's scheduled for tomorrow at the Shrine of the Green Goddess, but I couldn't. Apparently, my simple people look forward to the ceremony. Believe me, I did my best. Yes?
Your Highness, you're wanted in the audience chamber.
Excuse me, gentlemen. We'll continue our talk later. Now, what's it all about, Watkins?
The thought came to me, sir, that it might be dangerous to leave those two so close to the radio room. If they was able to get a message out, it might upset your plans.
They say they know nothing about wireless, Watkins. I made it a point to ask them.
I wouldn't be too sure of that, sir. Seems to me that all planes is equipped with radio. And if that's so, Dr. Treherne might have a working knowledge of a transmitter.
Yes, I've already thought of that. You shall go through their room and into the radio room. I want you to leave the door of the radio room open. And then you'll transmit a message that will make them betray themselves.
Yes, sir, but just what kind of a message?
Something that... Ah, Mrs. Creston, I was just thinking of you.
I thought my husband, a Dr. Treherne, might be here.
They're in the next room, Mrs. Creston.
Thank you. Excuse me, please.
Mrs. Creston, I want so much to have a talk with you.
Please, excuse me.
Watkins, I'll call you.
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Creston, please, spare me a moment.
Well, I'm listening.
Mrs. Creston, do you remember what I said last night when Dr. Treherne drew his gun? You'll recall he asked me if the goddess insisted on taking the life of a woman.
I remember very well.
Your life can be saved, Mrs. Creston, provided in your own time and of your own free will that you become a member of my household.
I refuse to listen. If that's what you wanted to speak to me about, I'll go.
If you have the courage to die, why not have the courage to live? You're on the threshold of the best years of your life. Why not take advantage of them? I don't offer you romantic love, but think. You'd live not as a mem sahib restricted to the women's quarters, but as the absolute queen of an absolute king. Your son, if you should give me one, would be the prince of princes.
Is that all? Have you finished?
What have you decided?
I have nothing to say.
Is that your answer?
The only possible answer.
It may be the only possible answer at this moment, but I assure you, Mrs. Creston, it is not the last word.
You are listening to The Green Goddess, produced by the Theatre Guild on the Air and presented by the United States Steel Corporation. And here speaking for United States Steel is George Hicks.
A few minutes ago, I spoke of the value to America's railroads of the new high-strength steels, stainless, and USS Core 10. These are examples of how United States Steel research solves a particular problem by making better steels. And for an example of how one member of the United States Steel family serves a whole group of industries, take the Carnegie, Illinois Steel Corporation. This member of the United States Steel family serves every form of transportation. For the railroads, Carnegie, Illinois makes not only stainless and Corten steel, but also makes many of the steel parts for locomotives and cars, makes wrought steel wheels and axles, and turns out literally thousands of miles of rails every year. For the automobile industry, Carnegie, Illinois makes millions of tons of steel sheets to be shaped into the bodies of the cars of tomorrow. In addition, this member of the United States Steel family is a leading supplier of special steels to make motors and axles and all the other necessary parts. For years, the demands of automobile makers for steel have grown in size and special requirements. Steel must be made with many different qualities and characteristics to make a modern car, and Carnegie, Illinois does that.
And more recently, steel is taken to the air. So Carnegie, Illinois, is serving the airplane industry. Stainless steel sheets are only one of the many products this company makes for airplanes. Steel for frames, covering, and firewalls, for motors and seats, for propellers and rudders, steel to make airplanes stronger and safer. This company makes them all. By virtue of continuous study and research and the knowledge of the effect of the various alloying elements, steel has become the most versatile of all metals. In fact, it has become many different metals. Using its skill and knowledge to help make and maintain the railroads and automobiles and airplanes of America is part of the job of Carnegie, Illinois, another member of the industrial family that serves the nation, United States Steel.
You are listening to the Theater Guild on the Air, presented by the United States Steel Corporation.
And now the curtain rises on the third act of The Green Goddess, starring Ronald Colman, Anita Louise, and Walter Abel.
Here, Watkins. Read that.
A message to be sent out?
Yes.
The lady has come to terms. She will enter the Royal Air Cells. Congratulations, sir. What suite will she occupy?
Don't be absurd, Watkins. That's only a trick for those two inside.
Oh.
Send that message in their hearing, and if either of them can understand Morse code, he'll give himself away.
I see, sir.
And reduce the current so this message won't get beyond the hills. So long as it's heard by Creston and Traherne.
Shall I send it right now, sir?
Yes, immediately.
Very good, sir. And if he tries to offer me a bribe, sir, do you want to know that, too?
Only if you take it. Now, get in there and watch their every move.
Watkins is gone. I heard the outer door close.
What was the message he sent?
The lady has come to terms. She will enter the royal household. It was a trap for her.
What do you mean?
It was a trap to see if we know anything about radio. He had the power so far down, I doubt whether the message ever left this building.
I see. Then now's our chance. Let's go in there and...
We can't. He locked the door after him. We'll have to break it down.
No good. It'd make too much noise. Lucilla.
Tony, Michael, what's happened? Did you try to bribe with Watkins? Perhaps he might send the message for us.
That's it.
Michael, try it. We've nothing to lose.
I don't believe Watkins can be bribed.
But if he can't, we're no worse off than we are now.
Traherne, we'll try to bribe Watkins to send a message. How about Major Creston, wife, Traherne, prisoners in Rook?
But what happens if Watkins won't have anything to do with this scheme?
It's our only chance.
All I'd need would be 5 minutes alone with that radio station.
All right, we'll try it. Lucilla, ring for him.
Yes, Michael.
Oh, just a moment. I want to know what you're going to be doing while I'm talking to Watkins.
Now, we'll get Watkins to come in here. I'll stand behind him. If he refuses to open the door to the radio room for us...
That's it.
It's got to be. We're in a spot. Watkins takes the bribe, or else...
Michael.
It's got to be. Ring, Lucilla.
Oh, Michael, I wish there was some other way.
So do I. Yes, Watkins, we'd like to talk to you. Close the door, please. Now, Watkins, you surely don't intend to stand by and see us murdered. Three of your own people, and one of them a lady.
My own people, is it? And a lady?
A woman, then, Watkins.
What have my own people ever done for me, or a lady either, that I should lose a soft job for the three of you?
Now, what'll you take to get us out of this?
Get you out of this? If she was offering me millions, how could I do that?
By going into that radio room and sending this message.
So, that's the game, is it? If the larger suspected you got word through, he'd wipe me off the slate like that.
Very well, then. You won't mind selling him. You've only got to settle the price.
Well, let's have your offer, eh? How about a little first installment?
I have 300 rupees and $500.
All I've got, $250 here.
750. Never mind the chicken feed. I thought you were serious.
Now, this is just a down payment, Watkins. When we get out, I'll give you $5,000.
$5,000? You're joking, Dr. Treherne. What good would $5,000 be to me in England?
or I'd have to take the valet in again. Now, sir, if I'm to do this job, I must have enough promise to me in writing to make a gentleman out of me.
All right, Watkins.
You asked
for it. You...
I can't hold it.
Hang on. I want that key.
I'll call the guard and order some...
Shut him up.
They'll hear him.
Open the door.
Tony, don't. The camera. The bathroom.
The key.
Go.
No.
Oh, Tony.
Well, nothing else you can do.
Oh, those rocks below.
Here's the key. Now, I'll stand by the door.
They might have heard Watkins.
He had the power reduced when he sent that fake message. I'll step it up.
Is there anything I can do?
No, just stay out of the way if trouble starts. Any answer?
Not yet.
Someone's coming.
Here they come. I'll hold the door. Try it again.
Here goes.
Get away from that radio, Gretchen.
Too late, Roger.
Oh, you killed him. You murdered him.
No dramatics, if you please.
You murderer.
Not murderer at all, Mrs. Gretchen. Your husband threw his gun. He left me no choice. Now, walk to that door. Treherne, follow her. I don't have to tell you that these men of mine would thoroughly enjoy using their knives on you. Stand still.
Michael.
Hardly a moment for romance, but I shall be... Poor Watkins. So you threw him over the balcony. Unfortunate for Watkins. And for you. Now you have more to answer for. Yes? Tomorrow the Green Goddess will have to be answered for this. A most unpleasant death. But you've earned it. Major Creston was rather lucky, I would say. Again. But this time, instead of at the dinner table, it is in the shadow of the altar. Rather a barbaric setting, don't you think?
You have the word for it, Raja.
Ostentatious. True. But let me point out, my good doctor, that 5,000 years of tradition govern this ceremony. The robes of the priests, even this costume of mine, are older than some of the stars. Even the knots which bind you to your rack follow a ceremonial pattern. Believe me, I'm sincerely sorry you have to be tired this way. It must be most uncomfortable.
Sorry. You're enjoying it. Just as much as the rest of those bloodthirsty natives.
Doctor, I really am sincerely sorry things had to end this way.
The show is almost over. Where is Mrs. Creston?
They'll be bringing her in a moment.
Listen, Roger, let her go. Send her home.
Unfortunately, I can't do that unless I risk my own life. Ah, they are bringing Mrs. Creston.
Michael.
Lucilla, how long have we left?
Until the sun sets. And I point out to you that the sun sets quickly in these mountains of mine.
Raja, will you grant me a request?
Within certain limits, yes.
Leave Lucilla and me alone for a few moments.
By all means. But before I go, Mrs. Creston, may I remind you of my recent offer? Ah. Your husband's body has just been placed at the foot of the Green Goddess. So. I'll leave you, and when we see each other again, I will no longer be the Raja of Rook, but a high priest in the service of the Green Goddess. Silly, isn't it?
Lucilla, darling.
Michael.
Hardly a moment for romance, but I shall be the perfect gentleman and step out of earshot.
I guess the message didn't get through.
No, I suppose not.
I never realized the sun set so fast. Lucilla.
Yes, Michael.
It's a little late to say so, but...
You don't have to say it, Michael. I've known it for a long time. I've loved you ever since we first met in Bajmal.
Lucilla, if only I could take you in my arms.
Here, let me put my arms around you. Oh, Michael, let me hold you close.
I am sorry to intrude at a moment like this, but I must break up this touching scene.
Roger, please. I want to speak to you.
What is it, my dear lady?
Let him go. I'll agree to anything you want. I'll do anything. Only let him go.
I won't have this. No, Lucilla, no.
Quiet, Traherne. Now then, Mrs. Crespin, for the last time, listen to me. Traherne will live. There'll be risk to me in it, but I'll agree to put him in jail. He'll stay in confinement until such time that I'm assured, shall we say, of your enthusiastic cooperation. If you delay, Mrs. Crespin, it may be too late.
Michael! Michael, listen!
Wayne! The message got through! Six of them!
Oh, one of them is landing! Look, Michael, look!
Not good enough, Traherne. Six planes, and at the most, five or six men in each. They'll be torn to bits.
Michael, the pilot is coming this way.
And the rest of the planes are circling.
They're wise, Traherne, to stay aloft. I'm afraid their only use will be to... Oh, hello, here is our intrepid flyer. You know, I must admire him in spite of myself. No weapon. Nothing except his spirit and a shiny pair of boots.
Lieutenant, this way, over here.
Yes, this way, Lieutenant.
Who are you?
I am the Rajah of Rook, your host.
I am Lieutenant Cardew. Are you Traherne?
Yes.
Well, I'm glad to see you alive. This is Mrs. Creston.
I am Mrs. Creston.
How about Major Creston? Where is he?
Dead. That's his body at the foot of the idol.
Did he do it?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Ah, it's enough out of you.
You seem to have forgotten that there are 3,000 of us, and at the most, 30 of you.
Now look, Roger, I haven't got time to fool around with you. Unless the rest of those guys up there get a signal from me that you're going to be a good boy, you're in for a surprise.
You probably slaughtered hundreds of my subjects with that bomb.
No, no, we dropped that one in our ravine. That was just a sample. But the next one may have your name on it. Now, make up your mind.
Ah, I see. Lieutenant, you win. Give your signal.
Right. I'll just shoot off this signal flare. That'll hold them off. I'll be right back.
This Dr. Traherne comes from falling behind the times. Now, if I'd had anti-aircraft guns, there might have been a different ending to the story.
All set, Roger. The boys got the signal. They'll hold off. All right, let's go. Oh, here, Doc. I'll untie you. There we are. Now, just follow me, and I'll get you through this crowd.
You win, Mrs. Crespin. My fond hope is that we may meet again someday, under circumstances more favorable to me.
All right, Roger, just step aside and let us through. All right, let's go.
A remarkable woman. Most remarkable. Beauty. Intellect. It was too bad things didn't work out, but, well, she probably would have been a damn nuisance anyway.
Theater Guild of the Air production of The Green Goddess, presented by the United States Steel Corporation. In just a moment, Roger Pryor will tell you about exciting plays and stars to come. Tonight, Ronald Coleman will star as the Rajah of Rook, Anita Louise as Lucilla, Walter Abel as Dr. Traherne, Cresbin was played by E.G. Marshall, Watkins by Alfred Shirley, the Lieutenant by Anthony Rolfe, and the Native Priest by James McCullough.